This is Pure Decking show number 345 for Thursday, April 18th, somewhere in time. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and reminding you not to provoke the disclaimer. I'm Morps, and tonight I have Madman.
Hola. Happy Thursday. Good Thursday?
Holy Good Thursday. Thursday. Good Thursday to you, sir. Oh, we could open the show with that now. Good Thursday to you.
Good Thursday to you.
Good Friday to you.
Oh, there's our you getting all religious.
Well, it is Friday.
So, oh, resident time travel. Fictions already.
No, Google has told me that that is wrong think.
It's so. Not wrong think. These are very crazy people observing their religion. Or very faithful people nailing themselves to crosses. One or the other.
I don't know, man, but it just takes commitment to lop that hard. Now, I'm not taking a piss out of the religion. I'm just saying, dude, nailing yourself to a cross is about as devoted as you're going to get.
Takes yep. a little bit of gumption to do that one.
I mean, it's up there with self-immolation with Buddhists. You know what I mean? It's a real commitment.
You have to truly believe to go that far.
Yeah.
So, oh, we skipped the alcohol portion of the intro. I'm actually drinking Apothic Red. It's a wine. So it went rather well with my cheap pizza.
I'm drinking a Yingling and Bullet Bourbon.
Excellent.
It almost sounds like that drink could be racist. Yingling.
I'm probably mispronouncing it, so I could be a racist.
No, you're not mispronouncing it. It's Yingling. Yingling chased with a bullet. Yeah, that could be right. There we are.
I've got the chocolate chip Pop-Tarts. They're more like cookies than Pop-Tarts, though. Although they are in a Pop-Tart box.
Has anybody tried the Pop-Tart cereal? It's no. actually pretty gross.
Imagine.
So... I don't recommend that one. I was unhappy with my purchase. A Chinese beer. It is not Chinese. It's Southern. Anyways. So. Oh, right. We didn't finish the intros. RU is here.
Yeah. And I am drinking a large glass of condensed steam.
Was it condensed under pressure or naturally?
Naturally. I have my Gabe Swizzle stick in it, too, so we're good.
Excellent. So, got a couple of articles for the discussion topic, because they'll kind of fall into each other eventually. It's from Pennsylvania? I was thinking it was
England?
From...
Yeah.
Oh. I knew it was America's oldest beer, but I was thinking it was... Further south, I was thinking, for some reason, I was thinking like Georgia, but, okay, I don't know well enough to argue it, so I don't care, but,
Our oldest soy sauce factory is in Georgia, and it was built in like the 1700s. Completely useless knowledge and not related to anything we're talking about, other than the Chinese comment.
A madman in his relentless pursuit to be a Trivial Pursuit champion. Actually, I'd
say there isn't many times I can ask you that at the job interview.
Nope.
Although I had a grandfather who was so into Trivial Pursuit, he memorized the Russian airlines.
Well played, sir.
Yeah. It's like when we realized he knew the Russian airlines, it's like, what the fuck?
Sits there and reads the cards before bedtime.
Yeah.
That's cheating.
So, apparently I look like him. Mom likes to screw with me by pulling out photos of him and be like, who's that look like? Yeah, okay. I got that joke when I was 8. So, anyways, so the first article I have is from The Independent. German filmmaker Werner Herzog has given his blessing to pirates who want to download his films online. The director, who also acts and will appear in the forthcoming Star Wars television series The Mandalorian, called piracy a successful form of distribution, and this is a misquote because they have the full quote here in just a second, and expressed his reluctant support of torrent users at Switzerland's film festival Visions in Nylon. Piracy has been the most successful form of distribution worldwide, said Herzog after being told by Ukrainian producer Ilya Gladenstein that he was only able to find his films on illegal download sites. He continued, if someone like you steals my films through the internet or whatever, fine, you have my blessing. The director, who has directed over 60 films, including some titles I can probably not pronounce correctly, Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans, a couple others that are in a thing, stated it's now easier to find his films online. You can find them on the internet and on Amazon, Blu-rays, or DVDs. Said, I'm happy about this because all of a sudden most of the requests and observations I receive now come from 15-year-olds who bombard me with questions of why can't we see this film or that film. So that's the article. That's it right there. I just enjoyed that guy's quote that piracy is the most successful form of distribution worldwide, and everybody's trying to say that, oh yeah, he said it was a successful form. No, he said the most successful form.
I don't think so either, and the man sounds like a true artist.
He's tired of trying to get his films distributed through normal means because it's a bitch and you can't guarantee everyone's going to carry them. So he's like, piracy, people will at least be watching my stuff, yay.
As I mean, true artist, not really caring about the commercial part of it, just wants people to see what he can create.
Sure.
Like, yeah.
Well, and, you know, as you're starting to see all the video, I mean, for a while there, between Netflix and Amazon and YouTube, you were starting to see it all consolidate down to where if you wanted to see something, it wasn't too big of a deal for you to see it, right? You either watched it on Netflix just by paying your monthly subscription, or you paid for it on Amazon, right? Well, now you've got all of the movie studio, well, not the movie studios, all the networks are trying to spin up their own online streaming service. You got different companies yanking their stuff off the different content providers and starting to spin up their own and do all these exclusivity deals. And now you're starting to see this with the games markets too, with the Epic Store, that I think you're going to see a lot of people go straight back to piracy. It's like, you know what? Fuck this shit. It's too complicated, and I don't want to have to run 40 things in the background just to play my games and watch movies.
Yeah.
Especially when half of them are collecting all your data.
About a year ago, I think I really saw a lot of people switching back to piracy. Like, I've got to have Netflix, I've got to have Hulu, and I've got to have Stan, and I've got to have HBO. Like, Jesus, man. Now there's the Disney one.
Disney's not quite up yet, is it? Disney
Apple Plus? TV.
CBS was doing one too. They were trying to make Star Trek an exclusive to that one. Too bad that Star Trek show sucked, so nobody cared. But
STDs.
That you can also the CBS exclusive one.
Yeah, that one.
You can watch through Amazon Prime.
Oh, can you?
Yeah, a lot of these they're semi-exclusive. And when I say that, I mean, eventually their stuff does come out on other platforms. You just have to wait a year. Like the Netflix originals, their movies, they're not exclusive to Netflix anymore. So if you want to watch the stuff as it comes out, you need multiple subscriptions. Or you can wait until they stop caring about their crap and let other people stream it.
Well, Borderlands 3 went from being something that I intended to buy at release date to, we'll wait for the Steam sale. So, which means probably a year after it's released before I'll get to play it, but oh well.
Yeah, seeing some backlash with the Epic Game Store and stuff like that, and it's going to be interesting. Yeah, I wonder if Red Dead's going to go to the Epic Store for exclusivity.
Isn't that one already out?
It's on the consoles, but not PC yet.
Oh, I don't know then.
One thing I do do with a lot of the piracy sites, there's a lot of older shows that just aren't being released, and you have to search for them.
Yeah, go ahead.
There was a werewolf show in the 80s and 90s that I liked. I never got to see it all, but it's not on any of the normal streaming sites, and you have to search to even try to find it. It's not something like it had a niche audience. It used to be on USA or something.
Well, that's what they're talking about in the chat room, is that you've got a lot of these boutique and super niche movies that you pretty much can't get anywhere except the piracy sites, because somebody happened to have the DVD or the VHS and ripped it and threw it up on a server a couple of years ago, and nobody's cared enough to pull it down. So
there are some movies out there that I've seen that you can't get on DVD and you can't pirate, and they're not on any of these Netflix or anything as well.
Yeah, you're digging through tape bins trying to find them.
Well, it's not even old enough for tape, man. It was a DVD release when it came out. It was called Noise. It was about a man who had sensitivity to noise. Started to become a vigilante on noise. I have no idea the name of the actors or anything like that, but I have yet to be able to find a pirated version of it. Hmm. Or even on Netflix.
So let's go on to the second part of this here, because I thought it was kind of interesting to try to tie these two stories together. We'll see how well it works. This one's from Torrent Freak. UK porn filters could mean sweaty palms for piracy blockers. This summer, the UK government will attempt to ban underage access to sites that have had a third or more of their content dedicated to porn. Everyone will be required to verify their age, and sites that don't comply with the regime will be blocked by ISPs. However, citizens who seek to circumvent the rules with VPNs, for example, will also find pirate sites still wide open. Before the dawn of the mainstream internet, underage access to pornographic content meant trying to sneak a glance over somebody's shoulder at a well-thumbed adult magazine, or if you were lucky, finding a VHS cassette in a friend's dad's cupboard, behind the coats and shoes, in a box, inside another box, in an envelope marked holiday video. Such things, I know, this author is not recounting memories. Why? Why would they? That's a very, very specific example, Dave. Wait, who wrote this article? Andy, that's a very specific example, Andy.
Andy's this kind of name sounds like he'd be addicted to porn.
With the dawn of the internet, things have certainly changed. With just a few clicks, one can find pornographic material, with graphic often being the operative word. What adults choose to watch is their business, but children being able to access as much of the content on taste platforms is probably not what most parents want. Probably not, but I also think a lot of parents just don't pay attention or care. So in the absence of traditional parental controls, the UK government has stepped in to prevent youngsters from inadvertently stumbling across adult content. From July 15th forward, the country will adopt a checking scheme that will require profit-making sites with more than a third of their content pornographic in nature to verify visitors' ages. It's believed that the age ID system, operated by major porn site owner MindGeek, will be one of the key facilitators of that. Editors, people, God. People who want to access porn sites will be required to provide scans of their driver's licenses or passports, provide credit card details, or activate via SMS. What, you think 13-year-olds don't have cell phones? Users' details will then be verified by a third party. There will be other ways to obtain verification, too, since some shops will be selling special cards containing a code that people can use to access sites like Pornhub and YouPorn. You're going to go in there in the trench coat and hide that in the manila envelope, right? However, eligible sites that refuse to play by the verification rules will be blocked by local ISPs, preventing them from doing any business in the UK, at least in theory. While the aims are noble, circumvention of this entire scheme for adults and children alike lies just a few key presses away. Subscribing to a VPN will effectively drive a coach and horse through the legislation, providing no fuss and instant access to all the age-compliant websites. To all age-compliant websites and those that refuse to comply as well. The government acknowledges that this could happen, but it appears to be seen, it wants to be seen doing something. Indeed, as part of the Digital Economy Act of 2017, the UK will become the first country in the world to proudly deploy such a system. However, thanks to many years of website blocking on the piracy front, large numbers of people already have the tools at hand to make July 15th seem more like nothing's happened. As website blocking increases, whether that's direct via ISP action or verification scheme detailed above, people have more and more reasons to learn how to evade those blocks. It doesn't really matter whether it's adults or teenagers spreading knowledge. On July 15th, if not sooner, circumvention methods will spread like wildfire. And this can only mean bad news for those that have worked incredibly hard to have many hundreds of pirate sites blocked in the UK over the past 9 years or so. Once those VPNs get fired up to access X videos or whatever other sites tickle people's fancies, it will soon become apparent that every single one of those previously blocked torrents and streaming portals will become accessible again, too. Good VPNs do not discriminate, and they do not care what people are looking at. Their aim is to protect users' privacy and make web censorship a thing of the past. The only saving grace in retrospect of the verification scheme is that decent ones also cost money, so teenagers may not always have the means to pay for one. Not like VPNs are all that expensive. That raises the possibility.
$2.99 a month?
Yeah. Say what?
It's $2.99 a month.
Something like that, yeah.
I mean,
YouTube channels advertise them all the time, so.
What does a coffee cost?
About that.
Yeah.
So, let's see. That raises the possibility or even likelihood that many people will take the easy option of downloading a quote-unquote free VPN from Google Play or Apple's variant. Many of these will have a questionable track history, especially when it comes to privacy, so people flocking this direction won't be doing themselves any favors. Blah, 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 blah. So anyways, the idea is that, oh no, because they're blocking porn, people are going to figure out how to get around internet filters, and now they can get to all the piracy sites again. Whoops!
And we spent how many millions doing this? Well, not us, but...
Well, the Brits.
You can see it now. 6 months from now, UK government hacked thousands and thousands of passports and IDs stolen.
That or, conversely, UK government moves to ban VPNs.
Yeah, that's where we were talking about it yesterday. That's where I think it's going.
But they have legitimate uses.
It doesn't matter, Madman. They don't care. They need to be seen to be doing something, even if it's nothing.
I'm sorry.
It even states it in the article, man.
I'm sorry, sir. Do you have your internet operator's license? Oh, your license was revoked? Well, you can't touch a general purpose computer. You can only use cell phones that have been locked down to only run the Facebook app and the Twitter app or whatever the hell. Of course, the ISPs will probably eventually want to start bundling and selling packages for that shit anyway. So.
I'll give them ideas.
Are you? Noise came out in 2007. You can get it on Amazon Prime for $1.99.
There's three movies called Noise that came out in 2000s.
This one is about a man in New York driven crazy by noise, decides to take vigilante action against it.
That's the one.
Director Henry Bean, writer That's... Henry Bean, stars what? Tim Robinson.
What site's that on?
Amazon Prime.
Oh, okay.
$1.99.
I haven't got that, but hey.
Also, Amazon has different geographic distribution deals. Just because it's available to us, it may not be available to Aryu.
I think it's also on a cult site on my DVD player. Let me track down the name of it and I'll get you the internet address.
Thank you, Madman.
Did he say a cult site? Because that is the coolest way of saying dark web that I've heard in a while.
Cult movies. DVD player came in with a bunch of streaming services already downloaded onto it.
Gotcha. No,
but they're all also available just to generic computer users.
I like the idea of calling dark websites and things like that occult sites now. I like that.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, it's not bad.
So, I feel like I've heard that somewhere before, though. Yeah, doesn't matter. Anyways, I don't know. I don't like seeing the censorship. I don't like the idea of the government stepping in and saying what you are allowed to look at and what you're not allowed to look at. I mean, there is such a thing as taste, but I kind of feel like that ought to be up to individuals involved. And if you're talking about children... their parents should be making that decision. If they're not, that's terrible and that's bad, and you should be, educating your people better. But you know,
we're heading down the D&D occult fear of the 80s all over again, man.
I know, man. It's just, it's such an inefficient waste of people.
You just see how many people got thrown under the bus by their parents not understanding it, just listening to the people at the time, and, oh, shit, my kid's into the occult. You know, let's throw him in church, camp, school, or something like that, and let him get raped there. Yeah, I saw so many friends just get fucked over because their parents had no idea.
It's not very effective. The kids are still going to see porn. We saw porn at school with their filtering shit.
Well, that's because Catfucker insisted on pulling up and setting it as the wallpapers.
My point is, we'll get around it. And I think the kids will get around it before the adults will. They're generally more knowledgeable about computers.
And
more willing to go on Google and type how get around porn block.
There you go. But it's going to be the cool kid at school is going to be the one explaining how to get around this. Because children talk to each other.
Hey, Madman, you remember back in high school when I got in so much shit for writing an IP address on the whiteboard?
Building honeypots back then. Just to see who would visit it.
No, it wasn't that. It was they were starting to block certain websites, and there was one that several of us were using at the time. And I, you know, people were like, how do I get around this filter? So I just went up on the whiteboard and wrote the IP address because they were doing DNS filtering, right?
Oh, nice. You were just direct connecting.
Yeah, yeah. And that was before they, you know, had a load balancing and multiple sites per IP and all that shit. So it wasn't nearly as crazy.
Yeah.
And
that's actually pretty clever.
And basically, oh, I drove the tech at our high school to quit. Well, that's not quite right. I helped the school figure out he was embezzling money from them by like tripling the cost of components and shit. But anyway, that point aside. Yeah, those were the days.
You know how much Ethernet cord costs? It's free. You just have to put tape on one end of it
and throw it away. Oh, Cliff was such a dumbass. Anyways, oh yeah, that was fun. So what we would do is we'd go in the computer labs, right? And we would take scotch tape, put it over the end of an Ethernet cord, and then, you know, grab a pair of scissors and cut it to size so you couldn't really see that it was on there unless you really looked, right? And, you know, plug it back into the computer because it was funny and, you can't get on the internet, right?
Awesome.
Then the quote-unquote tech they hired would come in the room. He'd break out his cable tester. Oh, cable doesn't work. He'd throw it in the trash and pull out, you know, go down the hall, grab another one, put it in the computer, and the computer would work again. Hooray, the computer works.
Wow, way to get free fucking cat cable.
We knew a guy who got, like, 20 free cat cables doing that.
Yeah.
So. Oh, memories. Anyways,
He started running LAN parties shortly after that. We don't know where he got all his cable.
Strangely enough. I probably still got some of those yellow cables floating around here somewhere. Anyways. Next story is from abc.net.au, and I believe RU sent me this one. Chinese company is using GPS tracking devices and smartwatches to monitor and alert street cleaners. Street cleaners in parts of China are reportedly being forced to wear GPS tracking smartwatches so employers can monitor how hard they work, sparking public outrage and concern over increasing mass surveillance across the country. According to a recent Xinhua News Agency report, more than 500 street cleaners employed by the Nanjing West Bank Environmental Services are required to wear smartwatches while working. If the smartwatch detects a worker standing still for over 20 minutes, it sounds an alarm.
Wow.
Get back to work, wage slave. Get back to work, wage slave. I mean, come on. The smartwatch is not only not only tracks the cleaner's location, but also reports their activity back to the company's control room, where a big screen displays their locations as clusters of red dots on a map. It knows everything, an anonymous cleaner told a reporter at the Zhengzhou television report. Supervisors will come if we don't move after hearing the alarm. Following backlash, the company said it removed the alarm function from the smartwatch, but reports maintain the employees are still being required to wear the device so their location can be tracked. The Chinese government is already in the process of building a social credit system aimed at monitoring the behavior of its 1.4 billion citizens with the help of an extensive network of CCTV cameras and facial recognition technology. Serious evasion of privacy. Too little thought is given to the lowest class of society and their usage. It's not live streaming. Workers turn off the watch after work, but they won't be able to continue to monitor. Okay, so they're more arguing about it. But the short version is, these street cleaning companies are requiring their employees to wear GPS trackers so that they can monitor how well they're working. And if they're staying still for too long, you know, the thing beeps at them. And now this is actually not that new of a concept. Truck drivers have had to deal with this for years, to the point that they've started buying GPS jammers just so they could, you know, get something of a break. And, you know, God help you if you work for UPS or FedEx, because they do the same thing too. They have like seconds to make deliveries. And that's why you see all those doorbell cam videos of UPS guys just chucking packages at doors.
Yeah, it's not because they're assholes, because they're on the clock. But wearing the trackers is,
yeah. I mean, and individuals wearing it's kind of pushing it.
Yeah. But then again, you're paying someone for a 12-hour day or whatever. You want 12 hours worth of work out of them.
And it's not like their supervisors are there. These are guys sent to go to these four blocks of China and clean them.
Apparently, down further in the article, the alarm actually is a voice that says work harder in Chinese.
Wow. Now that's humiliating.
Yeah.
I can just see the beeping. Just do a beeping.
Yeah, a gentle little beep and a, you know, 124-volt shock.
Yeah, but then the battery's dead and it's up. So, you know, you just take your jolt first thing in the morning instead of a cup of coffee, and then the battery in the smartwatch is dead and you're good to go, right?
Yeah. Yeah, on one hand, I can see it's not that bad. Like, what, 20 minutes? That's a decent break. Yeah. No difference to what Amazon does. I think it's just a collection of the stories that we're seeing. It's just collection of further and further Big Brother over the top of you constantly. You know, there's no 5 minutes to yourself anymore. It's like, wake up, put on the monitoring device. Like, Jesus, dude. That's hardcore.
Well, it's just... It's
feeding it into the social credit scores crap, too.
I don't like the social credit score, man. It totally doesn't gel with me in the fact that you can't just live the way you want to live. Like, you guys have seen Clerks, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And the argument that he has at the end of it, he's like, well, I didn't want to go to college. I don't want that life. I don't want the big house. I just want to hang out with my buddy all day and make a little bit of money. Like, that's the way you want to live. Like, they're not allowing people to live how they want to live.
What happened to the days when we all thought technology was going to liberate us, not oppress us?
Those were the days I thought I was going to be a transhumanist.
Yeah. I mean, granted, I enjoyed Ghost in the Shell, too. But when you look back at it, in Ghost in the Shell, there were a few couple of statements like, the only people who were the real witnesses were homeless people who couldn't afford ocular implants. It's like, yeah. Oh.
Yeah, it sort of made me want to keep everything as fleshy as possible.
You know, you have the opportunity. You think about it. If you were able to actually go full cyborg, right?
Yeah.
You couldn't turn it off. Like, you couldn't just turn off the modem and be alone for a while. Because if you turn the modem off, you would fucking die.
Well, that's why the Major would do the deep sea diving, because the signals couldn't get to her.
Yeah.
Remember? You have to take the most ridiculous ridiculous risk for 5 minutes alone. It's almost like the dude putting the chair in the corner so the monitor can't see him to write in the diary.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the technology's not here to help us anymore. It's here to monitor us, surveil us, and figure out what we're going to do before we even do it.
Learn Linux, people. That's
just outlaw it.
Most of the infrastructure is built on it. You can't just outlaw it. No, they'll make general purpose computers require a license. Oh, you're a programmer? Well, you better have your license. Oh, you're not a programmer? Well, you better have a dumb tablet that can only consume content.
Dude, can you imagine?
I don't even think they're going to push that.
And can you imagine? You wake up in the morning, you slap on your fucking monitoring bracelet, and it checks your blood sugar and shit like that, and reports to you to your healthcare company that you're not dieting, exercising correctly. There's one channel with the national broadcast telling you what happened overnight as you wait for your driverless car that you don't own. You get into it, it smells because some Yu-Gi-Oh weeb fag was in there fucking last night. You're driven to your office. No one looks at each other for fear of fucking lawsuit for sexual harassment. And every 12 minutes, your arm's buzzing at you to work harder. Like, that's your future, and it's coming.
Snow Crash had this fantastic segment in it where they were following, I think it was DP's mother and her day in the office at the government office she worked at. And she was reviewing the reports of all of her subordinates, and she didn't care about them reviewing the report and answering the questionnaire. She was looking at how long it took them to do it.
Yeah.
And then judging people by how long it took them to do it. Like, if they were taking too long, oh, this person might need some motivation, might need to be let go. If they did it too fast, they didn't really read it. And then, you know, there was the one guy who did it in the exact estimated time, and she said, prick. So, I mean, you know.
Yeah. That's how I see it, man.
Did I misremember the character's name? Wasn't the chick in Snow Crash DP?
No
possibly.
Idea.
I don't remember reading the book.
Oh, jeez. Now I gotta Google it.
Although,
I don't believe it's gonna be a hard oppression like that. I think it's gonna be more of a brave new world. We're just gonna be drugged out and not care.
Well, those who can't deal with it are gonna be taking
YT,
drugs.
Not DP, YT. Okay.
Yeah, zombie style.
Like, my mother? What? Sorry, go ahead.
Zombie style living. Is that what you're thinking, madman? Like, we just won't care because we're so fucking zoned out. Antidepressants.
Somewhat. And I don't think they're going to take the knowledge. I just think not enough people are going to bother to learn for them to care to police them. Because in a brave new world, you could still find Plato. You could still find Aristotle. You could still find all the subversive thoughts. They were in books. People just didn't bother picking them up.
Ew.
I think you'll still be able to get to all the sites you want to get to. It's just you'll need to know how a computer works to actually bypass what they're sticking on it and how many people learn how to actually operate a computer. Most of us learn this is how you navigate the OS that you're probably going to work with. And then when you get to work, they're like, well, we use this proprietary system for your job, so you're learning how to use that system, but no one ever learns how networking works, how the computer actually does what it does.
If you knew how the computer does what it does, it's actually amazing the damn thing works at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're not wrong, Madman. When I was working at the university, the number of students I had to deal with who didn't have a fucking clue what their computers were actually doing. They just knew if they ran LimeWire, they got free music. It's like, yeah, you know you're sharing your taxes out to everybody else running LimeWire, right? No. Yeah. Yeah, you are. No. No, that can't be right. Yeah. Yeah, it is. That's how it works. I actually specifically remember getting cussed out by a kid because he got caught running BitTorrent. and he had installed some program. I don't even remember what it was called now, but it was basically a firewall where they were putting all the known IPs of the bots that checked for piracy content. I can't even remember what the program was called now. It was some kind of a privacy guard thing, but it was they were trying to block all the IPs that they suspected were the bots that the RIAA peer block. That was it. Thank you, Psychros. I think it was peer block. And he was absolutely losing his mind because he got caught anyways. And he was telling me how it was impossible. He couldn't have gotten caught. He was running this program, that I was wrong. It's like, but you were actually sharing this file. Well, of course I was sharing the file, but you shouldn't have been able to catch me. And the guy losing his shit. And then, it was the second time he had gotten caught too, which is why he was running PeerBlock. And when he came in to pay the fine for having gotten caught a second time, because, the school got letters. He said, oh no, I figured it out. The program wasn't running when you caught me. He couldn't accept that the thing just didn't. He didn't understand what it was, so he couldn't accept that there was a flaw with this program, because the program said it kept you from getting caught. Therefore, if he was running it, he couldn't have gotten caught. No, he had to come up with the excuse that it wasn't running right.
I don't get it, officer. How could it have been me robbing the bank? I was wearing a ski mask.
Have you seen the... I think it's a Vine, or maybe it's just a short YouTube video where the guy goes up to the, he's in Britain, he goes up to the police officer and says, excuse me, sir, where's the nearest bank? And he goes, oh, it's just around the corner. Oh, thanks very much. Yeah. He pulls this beanie down. It's a ski mask, and he starts running, and the cop just goes, hey!
Yeah, it's
totally staged. Completely staged. But doesn't matter. So, I mean, that's what it's like. So, this kid could not understand. That's up there with, have I told the guy who thought he had Hackintoshed his HP laptop story? I told it on decking.
Yeah.
Did I tell that story on decking?
I don't know if you told it on decking. I know you've told it to me.
Okay. So, again, I was working with students because, I had shit I had to do. And that was one of my responsibilities when I was working at the school. It's been long enough now. It's been like 5 years. So anyways, this guy calls up because he got caught. And he goes, well, I don't know how to remove this program. So he was at least being honest about that. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, what are you running? Well, it's an HP computer, but it's running a Mac. But I made it a Mac. And I'm like, okay. Because at the time, I was aware of Hackintoshing, right? I had actually just done it to a netbook. And I'm like, oh, cool, you Hackintoshed it. Nice. He goes, yeah, that's what I did. He had no clue what that word meant. I didn't pick up on this, and I should have, right? I should have realized there's no way this idiot kid Hackintoshed his laptop. Because if he did, he'd probably know how to take fucking LimeWire off of it, right?
Yeah.
But, of course, I didn't make that connection because... I thought he had actually managed to Hackintosh following a guide online or something, because he said, oh, he followed this guide online and turned his computer into a Mac. I'm like, oh, cool. So I start trying to give him the instructions for uninstalling LimeWire on a Mac. Go to Finder, find LimeWire, delete it. It's not that complex of a shit. Oh, and restart when you're done in case it's still running in the background. Again, not complex, right? So, well, I don't have anything called Finder. But you're on a Mac? Yeah, I'm on a Mac. So go to Finder. What's fine? Click the icon with the face. Okay, that gets me my start menu. What does it say?
And at this point,
what does it say along the side of the start menu? Windows XP. Yeah. So when you say you made it into a Mac, well, I just downloaded this program and ran it, and it turned my computer into a Mac. You installed a theme pack.
Yeah.
He installed a theme pack and one of those docs. And at that point, was convinced that his computer was a Mac. I'm like, oh no, you're actually running Windows. Okay, I can tell you what to do. No, it's a Mac. Like, in denial that it was not a Mac.
With that logic, I got my Windows 10 to go to Windows 7. Because I'm running a Windows 7 theme pack.
And I just installed Start is back, and it downgraded me to Windows 7, right?
But yeah, I'm just running Windows 7 theme pack with on Windows 10 because I don't want to deal with the giant mobile phone looking shit.
I don't blame you.
Like the back, everything in the back behind is regular Windows 10. You know, it's confusing as shit to find anything, but just the regular front end looks like Windows 7, easy to navigate. Sorry, I find Windows 7 easier to navigate than 10.
I think it is too, because with Windows 10, they started trying to move everything into this new format, but they didn't have it all done, so all the Windows 7 menus are still there behind it. So some things you have to do through the Windows 10 interface, some things you have to go back through and find the Windows 7 interfaces, and it's just an absolute wreck. So it's just what it is, but... Yeah, so I think you're right. I think it's going to be very few people who actually understand how this stuff actually works. And I like something Psychro said back in the chat room earlier, that Cyberpunk was all about how somebody who was elite enough with tech could subvert all the control that everybody else was subjected to, which I guess is still true.
Still true.
So, and of course, nowadays you get arrested for it.
Yeah, it depends on where you are.
If you're posting on Twitter... But yeah, you're right. Yeah, in Britain, you get arrested for posting on Twitter.
I saw an article this morning where I think Facebook just purged like 500 people for wrongthink.
Oh, for God's sake.
And not just like, you know, Timmy next door for calling someone a faggot. It was like large political organizations and things like that.
Somebody needs to go in and explain to them that if they start practicing editorial, they're no longer subject to safe harbor provisions. So they need to make a choice.
So funny you discussed this. So I listened to some lectures earlier today. And it seems this has actually come up in court. And the courts have decided, since Congress actually... voted and passed a bill giving these guys safe harbor. And now, in the bill, they did list what the requirements for safe harbor were. But a nice judge decided Congress wants them to have safe harbor, so we're erring on the side of safe harbor until Congress changes its mind. So they can break the rules for safe harbor, and judges are still giving them the benefit of the doubt. Due to legal precedent and one stupid judge.
Well, we all know what we say to that judge.
Shut up, Wesley.
Oh, Will's going to be pissed.
I had to find a way to work it in somewhere, right?
Might as well.
Next article. This one's from ZDNet. Bots can be valuable tools for webmasters seeking occasional visibility into their domains, but malicious variants are a constant headache for online services. So-called bad bots can be tasked with performing denial-of-service attacks. They can scrape and steal data. They may be used to automatically publish fake content or reviews, and they can skew advertising or visitor metrics. Bots, in general, are estimated to make up roughly 37.9% of all internet traffic.
Wow.
That's a lot.
That's a shit ton, man.
In 2018, one in five websites, 20.4% of traffic, was generated by bad bots alone. According to Distill Network's latest bot report, Bad Bot Report 2019, the bot arms race continues. The financial sector is the main target for such activity, followed by ticketing, the education sector, government websites, and gambling. Yeah, based on the analysis of hundreds of billions of bad bot requests over 2018, simple bots, which are easy to detect and defend against, accounted for 26.4% of bad bot traffic, where meanwhile 52.5% came from those considered to be moderately sophisticated, equipped with the capability to use headless browsing software as well as JavaScript to conduct illicit activities. A total of 73.6% of bad bots are classified as advanced persistent bots. As opposed to advanced persistent threats, which are generally considered a human actor, advanced persistent bots. I mean, you guys are torturing the nomenclature here, which are able to cycle through random IP addresses, switch their digital identities, and mimic human behavior. This example An example of this is mouse mimicry, in which the bot is able to simulate mouse movement events a genuine visitor may perform on a website domain. These tactics are used to try and appear as a legitimate user for purposes of ad fraud, as well as brute force attacks against online accounts, competitive data mining, transaction fraud, spam, and phishing campaigns. Amazon is the leading ISP for bad bot traffic origins. In total, 18% of bad bot traffic came from the firm's services, a jump from 10.62% in 2017. Almost 50% of bad bots use Google Chrome as their user agent, and 73% of bad bot traffic was reported as originating from data centers, down from 82.7% in 2017. The United States outstrips all other countries as a generator of bad bots. In total, 53.4% of bad bot traffic came from the U.S., followed by the Netherlands and China. The most blocked country by IP is Russia, together with Ukraine and India. So, I love it.
We're number one. We're number one.
Nearly 40% of internet traffic are bots now.
That's crazy, man.
We used to talk about 40% of the internet traffic being Netflix or porn. No, bots.
Bots. Amazing.
It's crazy.
If you had asked me before the story, I would have said maybe 12% traffic, maybe 10.
Yeah,
there's no way I would have put it up is
20 to a quarter, right?
Yeah,
because I know how much happens with bots, because that's where like a lot of your fake reviews, blog spam, phishing, all that stuff, it's all done with bots. But it's usually, it amazes me the numbers coming out of data centers, right? Because these guys running these bots aren't like, yeah, it's coming from AWS accounts, but it's not like these guys are paying Amazon. They're going on GitHub and stealing somebody else's AWS keys, or some other method of getting the keys. That's just the most common one, right? So you just go on GitHub and get the guy who published his keys and go spin it up and start mining a couple $1,000 worth of Bitcoin until somebody notices and shuts it down. But we support the robot uprising. Yeah, moving right along, aren't they?
Yeah.
So
I never really thought about the irony in our catchphrase.
That's like a decade old joke at this point. I don't even remember what we were talking about when I first said that. I think it may have been the G15 satellite when we were talking about it on IHN. I said, well, we support the robot uprising here. So that might be where that joke came from.
You know, we just didn't want the robot overlords to take away our duty bags.
Oh, I know where it comes from, man. It's that Kent Brockman. He's like, I, for one, support the new ant overlords.
Yes, you're right. That is where it came from.
It's a modified version of that from IHN. And I think it was... some robot had attacked someone.
Was it Suave who said it? Or was it Big?
I wouldn't have a clue. I wouldn't know what show, but I remember it had something to do with one of the first robot attacks on humans.
Was it that one, or was it the one where the mall security bot fell in the fountain?
The mall launch security bot.
Yeah, before that. I don't know. Either way, we'll think about it later.
We've been spending more and more of decking just trying to remember shit from IHN. Get off my lawn! Anyways, next article is from abc.net.au, and is just scary. Bitcoin couple could face the death penalty in Thailand for seastead floating home in international waters. These are the guys who tried to start Sealand.
Oh, okay.
Maybe not Sealand. I think that one was off the UK, but it's a similar idea. A Bitcoin investor couple are on the run and facing potential death sentences after Thai authorities alleged their life on the open seas was a threat to national sovereignty. United States citizen Chad Andrew Elvrowski, because God forbid anybody be accused of a crime without having three names, and their Thai national Suprani Thurdipt, who also goes by the English name Nadia Summergirl, have been living part-time in a small structure anchored outside Thailand's territorial waters, about 12 nautical miles from Phuket's shore. But I am butchering these names. But when the couple fled ahead of Thai authorities, raiding their floating platform home in the Admarian Sea, where the couple sought to pioneer the seasteading movement. Seasteading promotes living in international waters to be free of any nation's laws. The sea evangelists believe floating nations will restore the environment, enrich the pure, cure the sick, liberate humanity from politicians. Well, I think they got the villain right, but I don't know about all the other stuff. But Thailand's Navy claims the couple endangered national sovereignty, and offense is punishable by life imprisonment or death. How would be living on a buoy a threat to national sovereignty, especially outside of your international waters?
Worried it was going to take off.
I guess.
Well, you think about it. You got two people that have declared themselves their own nation. There are other people that are totally into this. It really booms and takes off as governments get more and more authoritarian. Suddenly, Thailand have a small nation camped off their fucking coastline. You know what I mean?
No, and they've got an admiral who's sitting there going, "That's a solvable problem."
Yeah. Well, if you're going to live on one of these platforms, man, you better know your shit.
Well, you better know how to defend yourself too, because you literally do not have the benefit of a nation to
exactly.
Defend you.
So, yeah, you're not accountable to anybody's laws. So that way, you can talk to Lockheed Martin and people like that to buy the cruise missiles.
Yeah, the police complaint alleged the couple breached Section 119 of the Thai Criminal Code, which refers to the intent to impact sovereignty or deteriorate the independency of the state. I'm doing good so far on remembering not to pronounce the H in Thailand here, so just... The complaint has been filed against them for breaching Section 119 of the Criminal Code, as there's evidence showing they have publicly invited people on social media to stay at the site, which is adjacent to our territorial waters. "We have laws to deal with this. It affects our sovereignty," said the 3rd Naval Area Commander, according to the Bangkok Post. Ocean Builders, which is connected to the seasteading movement, said in a statement that Chad and Nadia are safe for now, but understand that Thailand is currently being run by a military dictator. The statement claimed a fair trial for the duo was unlikely. "We hope this issue can be resolved diplomatically with the Thai government, and we are ready to talk to anyone in charge at any time," Ocean Builders said. "We have tried several times to talk to anyone, but we're always told that we have nothing to worry about because we were allegedly in international waters." Mr. Elwoski and Ocean Builders said the couple were not involved in the building or the construction of the sea home. Videos posted to YouTube show the couple being involved in erecting a spar in the ocean and towing the platform home out to sea. Mr. Wolski told Reason Magazine earlier this year that the team surrounding the project were early adopters of Bitcoin and had spent some $150,000 on the project. According to the BBC, he reportedly worked as a software engineer for the U.S. military before investing in cryptocurrency. So what this is this dude invested in Bitcoin, got out when it was big, so he made bank, right? And then he got into this seasteader ocean builders thing, and now the Thai military is after him.
Well, that escalated quickly.
I feel bad for the guy. They said he's safe, so they're probably in the States somewhere, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, so you know, as long as the guy's not actually going to get murdered by the Thai military, we can make jokes. If the Thai military murders him for living in a buoy out in the middle of the ocean, that's a problem. Because it's like, were they hurting anybody? I mean, really? They were inviting people to come stay at it. It's their house. They're just inviting friends over. But it is international waters, meaning you have no protection from anybody. Pirates are a thing.
I think at that point, you'd be better off just buying a parcel of land in the middle of Oregon somewhere, erecting your own cabin, and living off the grid. You want that sort of lifestyle?
At least... pick to live off the coast of a liberal democracy?
Or at least, you know, not near where somebody might be doing regular military operations.
And I wouldn't have thought that would be a good place for it, too, because a lot of cyclones and that come through there every summer during the monsoonal season.
Well, yeah. If you're doing a spire that far out, I mean, how stable are those things? I mean, it's not like you're driving it that deep into the ocean floor, are you?
No idea.
I mean, as big as these things have to be for that to work, I imagine it can't be that far deep. I mean, it's not like how would you do? I don't know how you do a concrete base for the flank thing, unless maybe you're at like a high spot or something.
I have no idea.
But I mean, you know, the thing have to be a mile long to really put a decent base on it, wouldn't it? I mean, oil rigs float. Yeah, they're tied to an actual well line, but they're fucking floating.
Yeah.
I'm still thinking I'd go somewhere off the coast of California or England.
Once again, the ocean's too rough.
California?
No, England.
Gulf of Mexico wouldn't be bad. You'd have to
worry about hurricanes.
Yeah.
That's why I was going with California and England. England, you don't have to worry about hurricanes.
Yeah, but they get storms a lot in that
water. Yeah, they get those, what are the Arctic storms or something?
Yeah. Middle of the Great Lakes.
There you go.
You're not out of range of either Canada or the U.S.
And in most cases, that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, but now that you get to argue about whose laws you're under jurisdiction of, you're under the jurisdiction of somebody.
Yeah. Speaking of law breaking, let's go to the last news article I got for tonight. This is from The Verge. Student used USB killer device to destroy $58,000 worth of college computers. Considering how cheap computers have gotten, that's a lot of computers. Because what's your average lab computer cost? Maybe a grand? Probably not even that, but let's use that for easy math. That'd be at least 58 computers that this guy nailed with a USB killer. So anybody who doesn't know what they are, that's the you can order them. They're like a couple $100. It's a USB device that's basically a bank of capacitors and a boost circuit. And what it does is it charges up the capacitor, sort of like an old school camera flash used to do. And so you get this really high voltage arc off these caps. So once they hit the max load, because I have a little microcontroller to do it, once it hits the maximum load of the capacitors, it dumps all of that voltage back into the data lines. And whereas, yes, the UARTs for a USB chip are designed to cut the connection if they receive weird voltage, they're not designed to handle what is effectively a taser, right? So that chip will pop, and usually those chips, you know, fail open on those data lines. So the USB killer, as it can, at least as long as it's getting power, it'll sit there and continue to pump high voltage back into the data port, and it'll just destroy everything attached to that mainboard if you give it enough time. So these devices are cool. I know we've talked about them before. They're kind of like the emergency panic device, so that like, oh, here comes somebody and I don't want them to get what's on my laptop, so you plug the device into your laptop and let it destroy it kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, we used to joke about keeping the fireworks in the computer case in case, you know, somebody was going to break in to destroy your hard drive. But this is sort of like a pocket version of that. So a former student of the College of St. Rose in Albany, New York, has pled guilty to charges that he destroyed tens of thousands of dollars worth of campus computers using a USB device designed to instantly overwhelm and fry the circuitry. The plea was announced Tuesday by the Department of Justice, FBI, and Albany Police Department. Here's a name. Vishwatha Athuka, a former student, now faces up to 10 years in prison with up to 3 years of supervision after release and a fine totaling $250,000. He was arrested and taken into custody in North Carolina on February 22nd, just over a week after he went on a spree of inserting the USB killer device into 66 of St. Rose's computers around various locations on campus. Such devices can be easily and freely purchased online and can overload the surge protection in many PCs. Athuka, 27, apparently made video recordings of himself inserting the malicious USB device into the computers and said, "I'm going to kill this guy," as the PCs were overloaded and permanently ruined. So it's fair to say that the FBI and the APD had all the evidence they needed. In total, Athuka caused 58 $8,471 worth of damage. As part of his guilty plea, he has agreed to pay back that amount to the college, a small private school in New York's capital city. The Verge reached out to the College of St. Rose for a statement on today's news, but the spokesperson said the college has been asked by law enforcement to refrain from commenting. Althuka is a citizen of India who's on U.S. on a visa, having earned a master's degree in business from St. Rose in 2017. According to Albany's Times Union, he also pursued a computer information systems degree. Althuka appeared in one of the college's videos on Facebook in 2016, saying he ultimately hoped to one day become an entrepreneur. When asked why he chose St. Rose for his degree, he said, I see there are lots of opportunity in the college which will prepare you for the better future where I can learn to apply in my life. Yes, this guy is from India. The original complaint against Althuka didn't reveal any motive for his actions. He was filming himself. His motive was he was trying to create a YouTube channel. He said he wanted to be an entrepreneur.
What a dick. Strip him of any qualifications and deport his ass. Because seriously, man, that's felony vandalism, isn't it? Or destruction of property?
Destruction of property, with? Yeah.
Should be with that price, the expense, it should have been a felony.
So they've actually got a link back to a 2015 article, and I remember talking about this thing on Decking, where they have a pretty good picture of the USB killer device, and yeah, that looks about right. It's just a bunch of caps, a little microcontroller, and looks like some support logic there, a couple of capacitors. What is that thing? Probably a MOSFET. So, yeah. Yeah, it runs the capacitors up to 110 volts. When that voltage is reached, the DC to DC is switched off, flips the transistor open, and dumps it into the data lines. Yep, that's it. So. I mean, you know, he filmed himself doing it. He obviously was intending on starting a YouTube channel.
No doubt.
So, if you're going to commit a felony, filming yourself doing it, well, I'm sure the police love you for it, but you know, I'm going to commit a crime. Let's create evidence while we're doing it. No, the goal is to leave as little evidence as possible. No, yeah, I want to know video.
There's three people regretting that idea from last weekend.
Oh yeah, you were telling us about that. So, you know, I bet the cops get tired of this shit where they've got some kid they've arrested doing something really fucking stupid and they've got the video evidence right there because the idiot was trying to make a YouTube channel. I bet that happens a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, this guy had gotten his hands on one of those USB killers, 66 computers or whatever it was. Fuck, you'd think somebody would have noticed this guy going around and killing all the machines. Which I guess ultimately they did, but I mean, before they got to 66 of them. Go ahead, are you?
No, he probably picked a time when nobody is around, things like that. Why they didn't notice.
Yeah, at first they probably just... I mean, the first handful of them, you just think, okay, man, the machines are failing. They're lab machines or they're old or something. But after a while...
Oh, we had a power surge yesterday or something like that, you know?
Well, if they have a whole... If they're all sitting there in a row dead, yeah, you'd think the circuit went, right? But eventually you're going to start going, what the hell? And start checking the cameras to see who's been doing what to these machines, right? I'm just amazed they got to that many before they caught them. So...
Yeah, well, the first thing you use, like, are they plugged in? Oh, they're plugged in. Okay, maybe it's that power plug. Try a different one. Go check the mains board. See if the breaker's not out.
Oh, yeah, I bet they spent a ton in having electricians.
It would have been a hell of a time diagnosing that problem.
Before at least you at go, first. Well,
yeah. Like, there's at least 6 or 7 steps before you even start looking at the computer before that. Like, go get a kettle, plug that in, see if the kettle's working. Well, that's working, so the power is on.
Well, I bet they had electricians out there checking those circuits like mad, too. So there's probably just some wasted cost in that.
There would have been health and safety. Yeah.
Yeah, Cypress has a good point. If you're sitting there filming yourself doing it, by the time you get 60, that is pretty boring. So.
You watch many long-term YouTube channels?
Yeah, it's the same thing over and over again. You're right. But I'm just wondering if Maybe it wasn't a YouTube channel. Maybe it was something else. Maybe he was upset that he didn't have a job and thought he was getting revenge or... Fuck, I don't
Who
know.
Who knows?
So, anyways, let's do this. Alrighty. So, I got two things for you today in Digital Dojo. Both are on GitHub. The first is this pretty interesting project called Arjun. Or Arjun? A-R-J-U-N. I have no idea how to properly say that. It's a HTTP parameter discovery suite. So pretty much what this thing's doing is it's trying to brute force HTTP parameters. So it's you know, what's it saying? Regex-powered heuristic scanning. Huge list of 25,980 parameter names. Makes just 30 to 35 requests to the target. So pretty much he's found some different methods for exposing HTTP parameters. So if you're not familiar with that, that's what APIs use. So if you're dealing with programs that interface with websites, most of the time it's through an API. Websites also interface to websites through API. If you're doing microservices architecture with Docker and shit like that, everything's a fucking API. So this is a script for trying to map them. So if you're trying to brute force an API, or if you're just trying to discover it and document it, this is a very useful tool for that. If you're doing a assessment of an application that's got an API, this can be a way to figure out what parameters they have. If you're doing testing, trying to figure out what's actually checking for logins and what's not, this is another good tool for that. So, and they're saying a typical scan takes 30 seconds. So let's see. Introduction: web applications use parameters or queries to accept user input. He's got an example there. URL seems to load user information for a specific user ID, but there exists a parameter. But what if there exists a parameter named admin, which when set to true makes the endpoint provide more information about the user? This is what Arjun does, is it finds valid HTTP parameters with a huge default directory of 25,980 parameter names. So, and he's got an explanation of how it actually works. So, let's see, I'm saying so a lot. Request the URL is made and response length. So it does a bunch of heuristics to figure out what are likely parameters and do a handful of tests to see. And if it thinks it knows of some good ones, it'll test those. And that's why it's talking about 30 to 35 requests. But, yeah. And you can, of course, add your own headers to it. Arjun? Yeah. Could be Arjun. It could be the thing the Protoss pray to in StarCraft, too. What was that one? Madman, you've been playing StarCraft lately.
I don't remember who they're praying to.
Arzul or something like that? I don't know. Anyways. Neat looking little tool, especially if you're doing any kind of website shenanigans.
Yeah.
So, and then the second thing I have for you tonight is a GitHub repository that I believe was posted by Jason Scott of textfiles.com, you know, the archivist.
Yeah.
The internet archivist. He calls it the source, or the historical source. And it's got open source copies, or open source. I guess they're not really intended as open source. He has the source code to several of the old Infocom text adventure games here. He's got Zork, Beyond Zork, Hitchhiker's Guide, Enchanter, Abyss, Station Fall, Descent. Yeah, Zork 1, Alien Breed, Allegiance, Mech Commander 2, the Sirius Engine. That's the old school Sirius Sam games. So
yeah,
he's got
it's
a
all,
bunch of the source
laid
code
out
from
pretty
old,
nice.
Old school games. Oh, he's got Postal on here. I didn't see that one earlier. Postal 1. That was a top-down GTA-style game. Oh, he's got the source code from Heretic. Softporn, whatever that is. Sphinx 7800, Stunt Cycle, Galga for the Atari 7800. So, yeah, he's got a bunch of 7800 games on here, too. So, one, you know, oh, there's the source code for Free Space 2. That's kind of cool. Aliens vs. Predator 1999, Abuse. Remember the game Abuse? That was an interesting one. Star Control 2 is on there, Gravity Force. So if you're wanting to see some classic source code to games, he's got a lot of stuff on here, but including especially the old text stuff, the old Infocom games, right? So one, if you're wanting to do ports to weird systems, like trying to get, I don't know, Doom to run on an Arduino or something, you know, the source code is here, so you can at least get a shot of how some of that stuff worked. But like there's Quake. Enemy Territory, Quake 2, Quake 3 Arena. I know id Software is putting a lot of that stuff out, so he's just reposted. But Cannibalt. Yeah, he's got Cannibalt on there. Man, now I'm wanting the old days of LAN parties. But making me nostalgic with all these old games on here. But anyways, it's really cool to go through, and if you wanted to see how some of this stuff worked, you could actually find, you could go through the source code and see how some of this stuff worked, and or do ports or take inspiration, or hell, there's Duke 3D, there's the source code to Duke 3D. So if you wanted to maybe start a new game engine and based off one of these old school ones, you could certainly start that way. So
yeah. There's
a lot of stuff you could do with this. Plus, too, it's just really fucking cool to see it all. So, Cycross is saying he put Linux on an iPod photo. Yeah, I think I've got Linux to boot on one of those things once or twice. Not terribly useful, unfortunately. But yeah, you could get that thing to run Linux. Anyways, though, that's all I got. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site and subreddit. In the IRC tonight, we had myself, Sardonic, Cycros, DP View, Iron Angel, and Madman. And, of course, the IRC is just on the front page of galaxy15radio.com. We do the show live on Thursdays. I try to start about 9 o'clock Central-ish. So, give or take. And Madman, closing thoughts.
Don't have any.
All right. What about deep thoughts?
Depends on how I can hold my breath. I'm still wondering where you could stick that floating personal island without anyone giving a shit.
Off North Korea.
Oh, yeah. They'll bomb the fuck out of that. It's called target practice. And they're already shelling South Korean islands. Ooh. No. We'll call it Kimland. We'll be fine.
Yeah.
We honor the glorious leader.
Kimland, best Korea.
All right,
we'll have to mandate a certain hairstyle.
Oh. All right, are you deep thoughts?
All mohawks, dude. Everybody has to have a mohawk. If you go bald prematurely, we throw you off the island. Yeah, that's my contributing to the deep thought.
Of course, I guess now with thoughts being slang for something else, the phrase deep thoughts is not an Animaniac reference anymore. I think it just means a slut.
It certainly does.
So that's all I got. I think I already read the closing blurb. That's all I got. I think it's time to play the sound effects and stop recording.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
South goes down and call it a night.
Shut up, Wesley.